welcome to a special edition of the Bonfire Podcast here in Las Vegas at Extreme Couture inside the office of great coach Eric Nixick. What's up, man?
I cleaned it up for you a little bit.
Yeah, thank you. Glad I got to do this. I was supposed to fly out Sunday night, and like many other people who are trying to go to the East Coast here in Vegas, no flights happening. Yeah, so we'll see if I even get out tomorrow, but got the chance to come in here for, you know, Monday morning training. Is that what's kind of the tone you like to set to kick off the week with these Monday morning training sessions?
Man, it's been an amazing Monday, like with Dennis, myself, and then the rest of the crew. As you saw, about five coaches on the mat, about 30, 40 plus fighters on the mat. It's just really like get in here and really kick the week off right. We spar tomorrow, but Mondays usually set the tones for us. So it was a great practice and really, really happy with the turnout.
Yeah, and this is setting up, I guess. You guys have a very big UFC Houston coming up, right? Like, how many fighters? Four on that card or three?
Five. So Jocelyn Edwards.
Yep.
Then we have Michelle, who's fighting Zach Reese, who also was training with us.
Okay.
You know, and then that kind of turning a situation where Sean and those guys just said, hey, one of you guys can train, one of you guys can't. So I like both the guys and love having Zach in the gym too. So it was kind of a tough situation. Obviously, we have, especially in the middleweight division, we have so many middleweights that frequent our gym. You know, you're bound to run into some of those situations. Then we'll have Puna, who got the short notice fight versus Ramiz, another great guy. I was actually talking to Ramiz about coming out and training with us and getting some work in, and then we got a call from Ali and he's like, hey, Sean wants to book this fight. So you're like, ah, damn, you know. So one of those situations, man. Then you got Ige and Sean Strickland as well.
Yeah, we'll talk a little bit about that, those fights at the tail end of things. But I also saw Paulinho Cruz in here with a couple guys. Is that common that you would have like another coach in here kind of, you know, keeping an eye on some of his people and having his guys work with yours?
Yeah, man, I'm a big open door guy. I think I got that a lot from Randy. Randy never really had this like, oh, closed doors policy. He always felt there's no secrets in MMA. But furthermore, man, like when you get a guy like Paulinho in the room, who's a great MMA mind himself, bringing guys in, I just think it shows the sportsmanship that we have within this game. You know, you saw Johnny Walker training with Min Yang. You know, Christian Rodriguez is in here now. We were training with Julian Arosa a couple days ago. Yeah, Lerone Murphy training with Dan Ige. I think it just shows the fact that you know, we're human beings, but we're sportsmen at the end of the day. These guys can go in and compete and battle, but at the end of the day, we can still be friends. We can still learn from one another. So I think that part's very important.
Yeah, I love seeing that from the fighter side. I just, you don't see it as much from the coach's side, I guess, too. So that was cool to see.
Yeah, like Paulinho and I have been friends for a long time. He's just a really great guy. And I think, you know, we have a lot of that camaraderie amongst the coaches. I feel that's a common thing. We see each other so much on the road. We travel a lot together. Although we might compete against one another, there's a lot of just camaraderie, I think, is the best word, and respect, mutual respect. So when those guys are in town, vice versa, Sean goes out there and trains, they open the doors for Sean. So it's nice that we could pay it forward.
Yeah. Do you guys ever like sit and chat about like trends and like certain things, like philosophies on your techniques or what you like to teach and don't?
All the time. You know, on Friday I was working some stuff with Dan, and then Alex and Paulinho were standing there, and then, you know, I had a concept of something that we were working on, and then, you know, I went over to Paulinho. I'm like, hey, what do you like to do here? And then he gave me what he likes to do, you know? Mm-hmm. So you're getting different flavors and different ideas and ideologies and approaches and attacks. And that's what I love about this sport, man, is we're all trying to learn. We're all trying to become better.
Yeah. How much do you, I guess, pay attention to like the direction the UFC is going and the styles that they clearly want some of these fighters to have? You know, it seems like you go to a lot of these gyms. It's a lot of get up training, wall work, striking, things like that. Mm-hmm. Do you think that's just kind of what the sport's going to be trending towards more and more over time?
Well, there's a cardio element there. Yeah. I think when we can train guys to have that gas tank of up-down training, which is arguably one of the hardest things to do where you can break guys, we definitely want to implement that in our day-to-day training. So in case you're in one of those types of fights, you've been there before, you've trained it before, but moreover that you feel confident in your cardio and you're able to withstand that storm, if you will. Obviously, knowing Sean's fighting Fluffy, that's part of our game plan is having that cardio and that up-down training. So, but we implement that on a daily basis anyway.
Okay, let's talk a little bit about UFC 324. Yeah. Did you have anyone on that card? I can't recall seeing you walk past.
I didn't know, but I was going to go. My son ended up getting a little bit of a fever, so I ended up hanging back and staying, but watched it at home, man. What a great card.
Yeah, the broadcast.
Sure.
I was cage side all night, so I didn't see, you know, the bells and whistles in that regard, but like, did it come across to you just like a normal UFC event? Did it seem dramatically different with Paramount?
It did in a lot of ways. Like it looked clean, like a little cleaner in a lot of ways. Then they were doing some of the ad reads in between stuff. Yeah. You know, they got to make their money. I think Dana said that. You know, so there was those things. But for me, like, I like watching it on Fight Pass because I was able to listen into the corner and hear what their adjustments were. You didn't really get a lot of that, which for me I like, because you know, I want to hear what they're talking about or what adjustments that are being made. But all in all, man, I was very impressed. I think they rolled it out with a great main event, but top to bottom, man, a great card to kick off the Paramount deal.
Totally. Go back to that quickly, like the corner stuff. I mean, I feel like for you, like some of the moments they've got, like you traction, people have respected your mindset and how you coach is from being able to see your work in the corner with some of these guys. Like, do you feel like that's a loss for the viewer if you don't get to see some of those moments and they're just going to be putting ads between rounds? Or is there like a selfish part of you too that's like, oh, no one's going to have to see me and judge me and how we're doing?
No, not at all. I mean, that's part of the game, right? You're going to be ridiculed and you're going to be praised for, you know, maybe something good you said or something bad you said. That's just part of the sport, you know? Yeah. And for me, from a coach's perspective, I like to hear, like, you know, great minds like Trevor Whitman or Pablo, you know, guys, when they get in there, especially if there's a little adversity, you know, there's some adversity in between around, and what adjustments are they making? And then how can you read the body language of your fighter or your opponent for that matter? So I think there's a lot of things that go on in between that I definitely enjoy liking, and hopefully they highlight that a little bit more.
Yeah, I think they'll tweak it over time. But yeah, it's just like, I feel like the walkouts and the corner work are very important, because like you judge your guy, you're like, oh, he looks nervous when he's walking out. Like, it's all part of the experience of watching as a fan.
Absolutely.
So if it's just every fight is just, you know, they're in the cage and you don't get to see much of that.
Right.
You know,
it's like, very much the meat and potatoes.
Yeah.
Right?
I love seeing, you know, the send off when you guys are in, you know, the prep point, the final message, or, you know, Clay Guida's brother slapping him in the face.
Exactly.
You know, like, it's part of, we know, the foundation of the sport. So I think they'll figure it out over time. I'm curious to see when I go home to Canada and order UFC 325. Like, we're still on normal pay-per-view.
Right.
So are we still going to get like that
clean setup,
slate?
Yeah.
Or are we just going to get like a commercial and break?
Yeah. I didn't know either. Cause like, I jumped on UFC Fight Pass assuming that I could still watch from that perspective, and it was like, nope, go to Paramount. I was like, oh shit, here we go.
What'd you think of Justin Gaethje versus Paddy Pimblett?
Man, both guys left with their stock high. You know, I was happy for Justin because I knew that could have been, like, you know, his last fight if he didn't win.
Yeah,
definitely his last opportunity at a title. So very, very happy for both guys, mainly just because I think Paddy showed what he's capable of, showed his heart, just a wild back and forth, you know, and I thought the commentary was actually really good at bringing up a lot of the points where, like, you know, I would like to see Justin attack a little bit more to the legs, attack a little bit more to the body, you know, and seeing Paddy back himself up to the barrier, wondering when this, you know, his fit in was going to be. And that's where I thought the fight was going to a lot take place, was Paddy taking him to the ground, you know, and didn't see a lot of that. So, but again, like, I always look at, like, when Francis fought Stipe the first time, and then at that championship level, he made so many adjustments because of that experience that he had. Right. And sometimes those losses are your biggest gains.
Right.
So, and, you know, Paddy has every time out has shown just a better skill set every time. So, no matter win, lose, or draw, I think both guys won in that fight.
I felt like Justin, he was doing so much ducking in there. Like, I felt like he was going to get hit with a knee or an uppercut or something like that.
Yeah,
like,
me too.
God, and he didn't stop doing it over time too. Paddy just couldn't capitalize.
Yeah, and even Trevor was telling him, like, dude, stop dipping off to the right. Yeah. Like, he's going to throw that head kick. And, you know, he never made that adjustment. You know, it's funny because we teach that quite a bit when we throw that kick, to throw your knee through the midline first. Don't throw it stiff leg because your thigh will land. Very similar to Marlon Moraes and Aljamain, right? Marlon was throwing a kick, but it was actually the knee that landed.
Yeah.
And it was because of the penetration of Aljamain lowering his levels. So that's kind of what I was looking for. I was like, man, just bring that knee through the center line and throw the kick, right? But if the knee lands, it all works the same.
Yeah, a position Justin had a lot of success too is that kind of front headlock cradle position. I saw you guys working that in there today, but like I feel like Robbie Lawler was doing that really well in his championship run there, and Justin landed some good shots. Like, is that a position that you guys are seeing over time is very effective?
It's a position that you know, unfortunately a lot of us were stuck in when Randy Couture was in here roaming around. Sure. You know, front headlock, near side cradle, I think is a very underutilized position, and credit to Fluffy. I think he's bringing that near side cradle back.
Yeah.
It's a great position to maintain top. Guy will base a leg up, and when that leg gets based up, they're using that as their, you know, focal point to stand.
Yeah.
You know, guys need to break that leg down and get to that near side cradle position a lot more so they can fold guys back over and restart their ground routes again. So we get there quite a bit, and there's a lot of segments we like from there. So yeah, we use that position quite a bit.
Couldn't imagine how many more fights would be finished if they allowed knees to the head from that position too.
That's the spot, right? Yeah no kidding.
That would be the one. No, you definitely can't wait out those spots. So yeah, that's crazy. Justin, like, did you see a lot of talk about, did he have staph infection? Like, was he coming off antibiotics? He was headhunting the whole fight. Like,
sure.
Didn't go to the legs, didn't go to the body much. Yeah. He wanted that knockout.
Yeah, I didn't. I mean, I saw the thing on the neck. dude, you're going to have to put a bullet in that guy's head to make him pull out of a fight.
That's crazy.
You know what I mean? So there's some guys I think it would have definitely hampered a lot more, but just knowing his mindset and the type of fighter that Justin is, I didn't think it was going to matter.
Yeah, you gave Patty his credit too. Do you think he's capable of beating like these top five lightweights? This division is so damn good, but you know, there was some circumstance that I think led to him getting this fight and moving up the rankings after the Chandler fight. Like, was he a guy that you look at that? I know you kind of alluded to Francis as well, and is like, you know, this is going to be a huge thing for him to get better.
I do. I think he comes from a great camp. I think when you see his maturation and his growth over the years from like even the Jared Gordon fight and some of the holes that you saw, and then you saw the way that he just dismantled a great opponent in Michael Chandler and how good he looked. You're seeing him every time out get better and better. And, you know, granted, you might not have saw the offensive skills, but you saw the toughness and his durability in this fight. And I think there's a lot that he can gain from, especially from a confidence level, and then going out and skill build and know what he could make adjustments on. And next time out, I think he's only going to be better.
Yeah. What are your early thoughts on Justin Gaethje versus Ilia Topuria?
Ooh, tough. Tough fight.
Yeah.
I think, you know, Topuria is a data collector. He's going to see holes in the defense. I think some of those things that you and I talked about that maybe Justin was kind of overexposing, I think Topuria is going to look at those things and try to exploit those. If you're going to reverse engineer your game plan, I think, you know, Justin and Trevor are two of the best in the game that can do that and know what offense is going to come back at them if you're making these mistakes. So you're going to have to shore those things up.
Yeah, that'll be a very interesting fight. We'll see if it happens at the White House or somewhere else.
Cool,
or who do you think won, Sean O'Malley and Song Yadong?
You know, I didn't watch it like that. I had it on.
Yeah.
Like I said, my son was a little sick, so I was kind of like tending to him and watching back and forth. I know round one was super close. I personally would have scored round one for Sean narrowly. I think that he had a little bit more of the volume and the jab was a little bit more effective and he scored from the teeps and the leg kicks.
Yeah.
And then I think Song got a late takedown.
Yeah.
Round two definitely gave to Song. And then round three, I thought Sean kind of ran away with the round three. So close fight. I could have saw it going either way, but I feel like the scorecards were right. I gave 1-3 to Sean.
Yeah, I think it's one of those ones very close. I only got the chance to watch it from the one angle there.
Sure.
And I think that's what people don't understand about these judges, right? They don't get three replays. Like, it's three angles and yours can be completely different. You can think a shot landed where the other guy thinks it didn't.
Yeah, so. No, it's a great point. I remember talking to one of the judges one time, you know, a month or two after a decision was made. And he told me, he's like, hey, the perspective that I had, I thought that kick landed because his back was to me in the way that I saw it.
Yeah.
You know, and you never really think of that. So from their angles, they might be seeing something different than what we see.
Mm-hmm. What else was notable on that card? What did you think about John Silva and Arnold Allen with the back surfing? Oh, I was talking to Dan Ige out there. I was like, would you be mad if someone did that to you? He's like, I think I'd probably think it's funny. Like,
yeah.
Just kind of like Arnold's doing it, but I'd
just
be pissed.
Just a great showman, yeah. You know, like it was, I thought it was hilarious.
Yeah.
I honestly, for me, that was my fight of the night. I think just from a technical standpoint, yeah. Both of them rifling same side head kicks, the drop steps, the, you know, the linear angles that they were creating to, you know, the John Silva spins to counter the linear angles, yeah. And just a really good chess match versus two great opponents and two great camps.
Yeah. The big other storyline around UFC 324 was the change of bonuses that they announced morning of. Yeah, we got 100K now for performance.
100 grand Dan.
Yeah, and, I think he might do it. It might be 100K Ige. So we'll see. But 25K finish bonuses, like, how much is this going to help some of these athletes, do you think?
Man, it's huge. You know, I think, you know, we talk about this quite a bit, especially the young guys on their first contract that are making 10 and 10 and 12 and 12. You know, it's an unfortunate part of the sport, because at that level, if you lose your first fight and you're making 10K and then you're paying taxes and paying your coaches and everything else, man, like, you're barely walking away with any money. And you're talking about a three to four or five month camp, you know, and then it's like, man, you got to reset and do it all over again. And it's difficult from that regard, especially for the young guys, right? Some guys that now, like Mansoor, for example, he's on a second deal.
Yep.
He's got a couple bonuses in his pocket, you know, and he's able to put some money away. And now he's comfortable enough to be able to sustain a career.
Yes.
So that, I think that to me is a hard part. It's almost kind of like you're on this rookie deal in the NFL and you have to prove yourself.
Mm-hmm.
But it's very difficult for these guys to be able to make money and sustain that without, if you lose one, you know, it's like, man, I'm really got my back against the wall now.
Yeah. That's always what I've said to pretty much everyone I've talked to about this. I think it helps the lowest level guys the 100%. Most. Cause if you can double, you know, like you're 12 and 12, you double that with a finish bonus. Like,
that, who's the kid, the Ty first fight?
Ty Miller. Yeah.
Right. He got 100 grand, right?
Yeah.
He so did. Now, yeah. Now look, you got a finish. So you get 125.
No, so if you get the performance of the night, you don't get the finish.
Oh,
bonus.
Come on,
I know.
Just give the guy 25K.
I know. It's crazy.
But, I mean, think about that. So he probably went in with a 10 and 10 contract, right? Yep. And then whatever his little Venom deal is. Mm-hmm. So, you know, he's 40, out.
4,500
or whatever. Right. So, I mean, you know, that is, you know, triple what he expected to be making off just that extra bonus loan. And man, it helps immensely relieving the financial pressures off of guys, you know, who's the kid, Wellmaker, right? He was able to quit his day job and things like that because, man, they need these bonus structures to be able to make a little bit extra coin.
Yeah. It's such an interesting conversation. Obviously we all think, you know, more money should be paid to everyone involved. Everyone wants more, but I do hope that at least, you know, that can help raise the level a little bit. Like you said, you quit your job earlier, you can be more invested. Maybe it makes you a better fighter who, you know, has all those opportunities. So we'll see how it goes over time. I know they said kind of the discretionary bonuses they send privately are going to be gone. But
oh man, one more.
There's always always something. There's always a method to the madness. But yeah, we'll see how this goes. And yeah, some guys who wouldn't have, I think, walked away like that. The Josh Hokit fight, like that's not getting performance of the night, but now you're getting 25K for like a very weird finish. And I'd said that before. I'm like, let's wait till like a heavyweight fight where just like someone kind of falls over and then they have to give him a finish bonus.
I love Josh, man. That's my boy.
Yeah, that's pretty funny. So we'll see how it goes in UFC 325 this weekend if we get, you know, some more finishes. But that's an interesting card as well.
Volk and Diego, right?
Yeah. Are you happy you're not having to fly to Australia with Sean to fight Fluffy there?
I love Australia. Like, I love going out there. But, yeah, obviously the travel's tough. And then, you know, you're looking at 10 to 13, 14 days out there and getting acclimated and everything else. So getting booked for Houston was definitely a reprieve.
Yeah.
But I certainly love going to Australia. Love the people. Love the fans out there. They always take great care of us.
For sure. And they do. And it's always fun being there. But
it's
a damn trek.
yeah, it's a trek.
Do you enter this year with the same mindset as far as like your plans for cornering and traveling? Like, do you have to make adjustments to, you know, keep your sanity and your lifestyle over time? Or
I think for me right now, on a personal level, the thing that you know, my daughter's a senior, She's got, you know, basically 6 more months at home.
Yeah.
So just trying to make sure that I can be at these functions. So she's got nationals. They're defending national champions in dance. So they go out to Orlando in February. I was able to adjust my schedule to where I can be there for that.
That's awesome.
I'll be in Orlando for a few days, and I'll fly to Houston for Sean and Dan and Puna. So just trying to make sure that my time is being present when I'm home, you know, because those are the things that I think for me last year was definitely weighing on me a lot more. And my dad was sick at the time, you know, my kids and everything else. And then you're trying to, juggle the schedule of all these fighters and be present all around. I think that part kind of wears you out. And that's also a nice thing of having guys like John Crouch and Dean Thomas and Dwayne Ludwig, like guys that I can talk to about those things and those experiences that they have, and leaning on one another and learning how to adjust your schedule and being more present.
Yeah. Would you prefer to do something like Houston where it's 5 guys on a card, or like, you know, where it's 1 there, 2 there, 1 there?
I like it, man. Yeah. 'Cause it's just like, it feels like the whole team is there. The whole gym is there. And, you know, Dan and Puna and Sean are very easy during fight week. They're not like very demanding. They're not needing stuff all fight week long. So especially with those 3 guys, it's not that hard, but it just feels like the whole team and that, you know, all the coaching staff damn near is going to be out there. So I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. For Sean, I guess let's just go into that. I mean, this is his longest layoff, and I don't know how long, where he's taken a year. Yeah. Between fights. Good for him, do you think, in hindsight? I know it was somewhat forced upon him, but
yeah. I think it was good for all of us in a lot of ways to kind of just hit the reset button, refocus on what our goals are, what our approach is. But I'll say this, like the one thing that I was very happy with and impressed with was usually Sean, he's always in the gym. He's always in the gym training. But during this time, it allowed him to kind of be that quasi coach, you know, just his involvement with like Edmund and Mansoor and Chris and like the other teammate guys. Mm-hmm. And showing his, what would the word be? Just making himself available, right? Like a lot of these guys would just leave and go off and travel and hang out and relax. Mm-hmm. And he was a mainstay in the gym and helping all these guys get ready for their fights. So those victories that we got during that time, you know, is really a testament to Sean and him working with these guys and helping these guys. So he really became even a better teammate during that time.
That's great to hear. I see Sean in here, obviously, every single time I've been here. He's always working. I don't know if I've ever seen him lift a weight.
Never.
Does he ever? He never.
Hell
does.
No. Hell no.
It's not his thing?
No. You're never going to catch him lifting weights. Yeah. Ever.
Why? Does he ever
You know, it, he's like, he's got that Marab mentality. I think he's like, my cardio and strength comes from training, right? Like, why am I going to supplement something else for this? Mm-hmm. So the one thing that I think the PI has helped him with a ton is recovery and understanding preventative weightlifting, like preventative injuries through weightlifting. So any weightlifting that he does is to negate some of those injuries or to help heal, stuff like that. But you're never going to see him power cleaning and squatting like Alex out here right now, right? Squatting 405, you know? So yeah, you're just not going to see Sean doing that shit.
Yeah. I don't think Fluffy strikes me as that type of guy.
No, neither of them. Just 2 caged dogs right there.
Yeah. And I'm very much looking forward to that fight. The build's going to be interesting. I think it's going to set the record for F bombs and in a media day it's bad. We'll see.
Beep, 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 beep. Like they're talking Morse code.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, obviously Sean's goal here is very clear. He wants to win this fight. He wants Hamzat. Mm-hmm. He believes he has the style to answer it. And he told me like 4 months ago when I was here, like I want Fluffy. He's the American Chimaev. I'm going to show everyone I can shut that style down, and then I'm going to go beat him. Does he seem like very focused to you in terms of trying to achieve that goal here?
100%, man. And like, you know, some of some of the things that Sean and I were butting heads on were things that I think that we needed to be better at. And as far as like the training, the drilling, the preparation, and he's bought in, man. And like, at the end of the day, like wins and losses are going to come and go. But to me, it's a lot about our preparation and how invested we are in preparing for these types of fights. And man, he's been all in, you know, and not only has he been all in, so is the team. Like you'll go to the practices that we'll do wrestling, and we got you know, damn near 20 guys in there, and it's nice because everyone's rowing the boat in the same direction, and that part's important to me.
Yeah. How important a fight like this is, I guess, not getting frustrated for Sean, and then also, like, just who the referee is going to be, especially if we get, you know, to ground positions.
Yeah, I didn't think of that too much, but my expectations are just not to be there, right? Mm-hmm. Like we control that. We control that pace. Obviously you saw in practice today, like, it's like, you don't want to be stuck in those positions with Fluffy. Mm-hmm. And that is where he shines. His mat returns, his pressure, his ground and pound. And if we're staying there long, it's going to be a problem, right? Mm-hmm. So our main focus is A, not to be there, and B, if we are there, don't be there long.
Yeah. Do you feel like Sean has, like, the biggest answer for Chimaev right now, given their history together and training and
yeah, I mean, I do. Just I do, in the regards of just knowing how good Sean's wrestling is.
Sure.
And, like, everyone in here knows how good Sean can wrestle, and mm-hmm. and his ground game. Unfortunately, we just don't see it as much as we like in a fight.
Right.
Sean was showing a technique one day, and it was hilarious because Brad's like, all right, everybody take a picture of this because you're never going to see it in a fight. You know, so, but yeah, I think there's a lot of backstory there with Chimaev being out here and training with us. And, you know, he was a huge asset to the gym and the team when him and Darren Till came out. And it was funny because, like, those guys really hit it off. And then all of a sudden they're, like, going back and forth on social media for this buildup. So I get it. And I know there's a backstory there. And you know, hopefully we can get past Fluffy and have that opportunity to go and compete.
I wonder if they would ever consider putting that fight on the White House card if it lined up.
I don't know if those two would be allowed.
I mean, who knows?
Yeah, we'd be allowed.
Are you hoping to be involved in that in some way, to, like, have someone on there?
Oh, yeah.
If you're not, are you?
Yeah, cool. I think for me, like, historically, being involved in the Jacksonville fight where it was the first sporting event in the world, you know, I was there for basically a week and a half. I had three fighters on those three cards. Mm-hmm. And then the first Fight Island card, you know. So those things are pretty epic in being able to
look
back.
Do you have anyone on the Sphere?
I did. Yeah. I had the Sphere as well. So, but yeah, definitely love that opportunity to be able to go to the White House and corner a fight there. That would be pretty freaking cool.
Yeah, that would be. We'll see how it all goes. They're saying now there won't be, like, any sponsors or anything on the cage.
Crazy.
Like, it's going to be – we'll see. Like, it's getting close now. I mean, according to Dana White, then they're matchmaking it as we speak here on the Monday.
That's awesome.
So we'll see. Okay, before I let you go, your thoughts on this weekend, Diego Lopez, Alexander Volkanovski. Like,
sure.
What do you think Diego can do differently to make this a different fight this time?
Yeah.
You know, not often we get, like, this kind of rematch scenario, a second chance for Diego. I feel kind of bad for Volk because he got through it the first time. But how is this one going to be different, if at all?
You know, we actually talked. I talked to Spencer Kite about this as well. We broke the first fight down, and it's very similar to me in a lot of ways. And not to regurgitate what I said to him last time, but the term that I used was chaos and order, right? Volkanovski is the order, whereas Diego is the chaos.
Mm-hmm.
And which one can pull the other one into their style of fight. For me, a guy that loses the first matchup is going to take more out of it and understanding what adjustments he needs to make to favor his style. And how can he draw Volkanovski into that gunfight, if you will? And that's where I saw in the first fight that Diego was having his most amount of success.
Mm-hmm.
For me, I think understanding the geography for Diego and how can you bottle up a guy who utilizes his lateral movement very well. And that's to fight a guy more in the corner posts and utilize the cage and put him in bottlenecks.
Yeah.
So those are the type of adjustments I think that he needs to make. Secondly, I think Diego needs to attack the legs and flatten the tires of a guy who moves around a lot.
Yeah.
We saw Max use the leg kicks quite a bit in the second fight versus Volkanovski.
Yep.
And I think that was very successful for Max in slowing down Volkanovski's movement. So, and the great thing about Volk, man, is every time you watch the guy, you see new tools, new tricks, new things. So I think both guys are going to come out very well prepared. Looking forward to the matchup, man, just as far as a chess match, you know, and see adjustments they can make.
Would you say, you know, the stuff about the posts and the bottleneck and stuff, is a lot of that to do with footwork and cutting off the cage?
Absolutely.
And that's what it seemed like he had a tough time doing. Seemed like he was following Volk a lot in the first
fight. Yeah. You know, you have your traps, your cutoffs, and then, you know, you can get into a chase where you start to chase guys. That was something that, you know, we worked on quite a bit when Sean fought Izzy. if you chase Izzy, Izzy's going to change his stance and he's going to walk you into a new stance and then possibly a counter. Mm-hmm. But if you're able to hedge that corner post off or be in front of him in a certain direction, knowing that you can cut that angle, you have offense from there as well. Something Manel did really well in his last fight. Yeah. You know, that's something we take a lot of pride in, and is our cutoff and our cage control. Something that, I mean, honest to God, Randy was harping on us about this 15 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, something he said to us, about understanding that cage control is his own art. Mm-hmm. And once you guys can understand these cutoffs, and this is back in a day when if you're orthodox, you're orthodox.
Yeah.
You know, now the evolution of the sport, now we can be in and out of both stances and utilize offense from both stances, you know? So
yeah,
that's where I think a lot of that cage control comes in, but being able to use both stances at the same time.
Yeah. Well, I love that you preach that, because it feels like not everyone, and you know, the sport does, like in boxing, cutting off the ring is just like such an important fundamental in MMA. It's like,
you know, what's interesting about that?
Be like, cut off the cage.
A lot of guys really don't have access to a cage.
Right. Especially that size.
I didn't think of that.
Yeah.
You know, like guys will come to the gym. Like I just worked with Jacoby Smith last week, and I'm like, how much cage control do you do? And he's like, I don't even work in a cage.
Right. Yeah.
You know, and they're like, oh, you know, and it's not because like they just don't have access.
Yeah.
So if you don't have access to it, your gym just is as a mat or wherever you're doing it upstairs.
Yeah,
wall mats, you know. So it's something that I kind of take for granted. I mean, we have two huge cages in our gym. So we're definitely the benefactors of having that, and we utilize it to the best of our advantage.
Yeah, fascinating. So ultimately, are you picking Diego or Volk in this one?
Oh, man, I'm rooting for Diego. But it's hot. I coin flip it.
It is. It was a tough fight last time.
Tough fight. I personally think Volkanovski is just so smart and tactical, fight IQ and situational awareness. He's going to be a tough out. He really is, man. He's just going to be a tough out. But like I said, I can see Diego getting him into some of those chaotic rounds and being able to find a finish. So to me, it's either Volkanovski by decision or Diego by KO.
Yeah, which I feel like we were saying in the first fight too. Exactly. So we'll see what happens. Awesome, man. Well, this has been a treat. I love picking your brain on stuff. And yeah, this is awesome, man. So we'll take a quick break and be right back to wrap things up here on The Bonfire. That's it for a special edition of The Bonfire podcast from here at Extreme Couture. Definitely was not the plan for this week, but wanted to get you guys a show kind of talking about the storylines out of UFC 324 and a little bit of talk ahead to UFC 325. That was great stuff. I love Coach Nixick and his insights into the sport. So I'm planning another show, hopefully before UFC 325. We'll get some more in-depth breakdowns and all that stuff. Just a lot going on here with all the travel and the storm out there in the East Coast. We'll see when or if I get home at any point. But for now, that does it. Till next time, I will see you all back here by the bonfire.